Blog Talk Radio.
The Triple Award winner, Five Easy Pieces. Best Picture of the Year. Best Director, Bob Rafelson. Best Supporting Actress, Karen Black. Five Easy Pieces.
You know, I'll go out with you, or I'll stay in with you, or I'll do anything that you like for me to do, if you will tell me that you love me.
So much Karen Black, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and visit us soon. The show is brought to you today on the iPhone, Android, Palm, and BlackBerry by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. You can also subscribe for free on iTunes. Mr. Media is also sponsored by thepartyauthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event? For any and all occasions, call the Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJs. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world and hometown of actors Angela Bassett, Patrick Wilson, and Monica Raymond, St. Petersburg, Florida. Some actresses land a single role and are known for it the rest of their lives. So how do you describe a Karen Black, who added life to movies as different as Easy Rider with Jack Nicholson, Peter Fonda, and Dennis Hopper, Five Easy Pieces, again with Nicholson, and The Great Gatsby with Robert Redford, as well as Robert Altman's Nashville, and even Alfred Hitchcock's Family Plot? In the 1970s, Karen Black was someone the top actors and directors all wanted in their movies. She became ubiquitous without becoming unwelcome or unwell. Here's a taste of some.
Miss Connie White.
Well, I like to go to Memphis, but I don't know the way, and I like to
stay. What are you doing?
You know, I'm kind of a freak myself.
They're looking for you too, you know.
I just went out to get some cigarettes.
You don't know anything, do you?
I was sitting right here with a temperature of 101, and they took off their clothes and went at it right there on the rug.
You're a real hell of a good person for putting up with me, that's all.
She found me dead one time. Just killed me.
He had a dress suit and patent leather shoes, and I could see he was a real gentleman.
Don't make me hurt you. You're very kind and clever, but I could only let a really rich man love me.
You saw it left a bridal plane!
Don't give up so easily. Just change your approach.
What approach would you like?
How about something like, I would like to jump you.
Think that would work?
Stands a better chance than wanting to share a meaningful life together.
I would like to jump you.
Go jump yourself.
I've been waiting for you, Ben.
Did you see anyone we know?
Two men who looked like police, and a third who just had to be FBI.
If I think he sent someone to follow me, why, that means that I think he doesn't love me. And I probably am wrong, because I always think he doesn't love me, and I know he really loves me. So I'm having a contradiction with myself, do you understand?
Watch those movies, and you know that Karen Black will always be ageless on screen, in our mind's eye. And she's still quite busy today, having become a regular player in writer and director Henry Jaglom's Company of Actors. She was in his films Irene in Time and Hollywood Dreams, starring Tana Frederick, who's also been on this show. And this week, she joined Frederick in the production of Jaglom's new play, just 45 minutes from Broadway, at the Edgemar Center for the Arts in Santa Monica, California. The play has been extended through July 31st. You can order tickets online at edgemarcenter.org or call 310-392-7327. Karen Black, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
I'm delighted to
have
you.
Are you having
nice
a good day
you.
So far? Nice to
so
meet
far.
You, sister.
So far. So far.
So far, have you had your tea and your breakfast and your
in my case, it was a glass of cherry Dr. Pepper, and I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Not very healthy, dear.
Well, you know, one glass a day, that's about all I'll allow myself, but I think it'll be okay.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful voice.
Well, thank you.
Well, maybe Cherry Coke help
it.
Thank you. I actually don't like my voice, you know.
Really?
It's kind of odd. Yeah, I don't like it.
Really?
But I like to sing. I like it when I sing.
Well, you know, it's. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to ask you about the singing later, but let's go to that now. I wondered if you regretted that you didn't sing more in your career.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I keep singing. You know, I studied opera and I have a slow voice. Well, I'd like to go to Memphis, but I don't know the way, and I'd love to. So all that, and I think basically I'm very bad at PR, promotion, and I've never, like, let people know that I sang that much. But what happened was something very chummy and nice. Cass McCabe just asked me to be in his album, and now I guess I'm going to do a whole album, and three record companies want me to sing songs. And this year sometime I'm going to be making an album of my very own, and I think it's going to be kind of country, kind of 50s romantic sort of cross.
Is that the first time?
That's the first one!
Wow.
That's the first one, yeah.
Well,
Kath McCombs. Kath McCombs. His album is called Catacombs, and I'm on that a little bit. And then somehow they just all got interested in our writing songs together and Maya doing it, my own album. It's just a wonderful surprise. But we should talk about Henry. I've known Henry since the 60s, and he's always been an incredibly feverish guy. He loves communication. He loves movies. He loves writing. He's just always been this feverish genius. And he used to come over, and if you said something interesting, you or me or any of his friends or anyone he knew, he'd tear away napkins and pieces of paper and old envelopes and start writing down what you were saying to put it in a movie. You just need to put it in a script. And you'd have lunch with him, and he'd turn up with a camera. And you'd say, God bless it. You know, I'm not wearing any makeup. Will you go away? No, what? And then he'd talk, and he'd get everything on film. He's just an amazing character. He is amazingly prolific. It's endless with him. And everything he does, everything he touches is enormously successful. He is definitely, for me, like a brother. You know, we have that kind of argumentative, I love you, I will never have to live without you, thank God, but stay out of my space at this time, relationship. I mean, really, we are really a pair, I mean, he and I. And when he called me to invite me to be in this play, I was so excited and thrilled because I've seen it twice and I just love it. It's wonderful. It's so wonderful. This crazy family upstate New York. Everyone's like quoting movies and talking about the Yiddish theater and God knows what's going to happen next. And into our midst comes my daughter, my other daughter, who has nothing to do with show business and hates show business. And she and there's all this like it's like the force of freedom and non-compliance with the force of being a regular person and living the good life, so to speak. You know, it's that conflict that goes throughout the play. And it's just remarkable. And people, we have standing ovations, and they're laughing and crying. That's just, it's, you know, to me, after all these years, It's his best work. I'm thrilled to be in it.
Now, had you, this is something I don't know. How much live theater had you done before?
Oh, I started in Broadway. I started out on Broadway as a 17-year-old. I did a play called The Playroom in 1965, and I was nominated Circle Critics Award, Drama Circle Critics Award, even though I was very young. It's unusual. I didn't win, but I was nominated, and some very good people voted for me. And then I went on to do a play called, I can't remember, Something Forever After, and Another Springtime. I did a few Broadway shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that time, believe it or not, strangely enough, Henry had Kevin Castleman fly in and wine and dine me in New York City and get me out to L.A. here to be an actor and to be his client. And he was then my agent. And I couldn't drive. I had no car. And he would drive me around. And I would sort of play virgins on, you know, television, like where you'd be in a stagecoach, you'd be on a train, and that's what I would do for a while. But it was really largely because of Henry. Much of what's happened to me in my life, I hate to admit it, but it's true. And here we are again doing this beautiful play he's written. Unbelievable. We're working together again.
Well, I mentioned in the introduction that Tana Frederick had been on the show probably about a month ago, who I guess you've now worked with several times, and she had nothing but good thing to say about Henry, but also said sort of that you have to know when to stay out of his way.
Are you asking me to complain about Henry?
Only if you want to.
Well, I already complained. Yeah, he can be quite a something to handle. He's good, so you better love him a lot, Tana is not Tana, she's Tana. And she is a glorious human. She's a big mane of red hair and more life force than five or six people put together. She's remarkable in the show. And she's remarkable in every movie she's in. She's a great gal. Just love her. She's like a goddess. Really, she is. That's what I call her. She's like a goddess.
Well, Karen, as far back as you go with Henry, had you done movies of his before Irene and Hollywood Dreams?
You bad boy. You don't know that I did Tanji Baker Cherry Pie with him?
I did not know that.
Now, listen, I am really remarkable in, I hate to overuse an adjective, in Tanji Baker Cherry Pie, and you should go get it. It's now back on sale. Tanji Baker Cherry Pie. I think it was the 80s we did it, and it's just hilarious. It's really good. Since I'm in it, I think it's just one of his very best movies ever made. But it's really, Tanji Baker Cherry Pie is just delightful, very hilarious.
You know, I wanted to ask you, in a broader, moving away from Henry's for a minute, you saw and did so much during one of Hollywood's, I think, most creative eras. Maybe it's because when I was growing up. But which of the films, you know, the 70s, late 60s, early 80s, which of the films that you worked on stands out most in your memory? Are you most proud of?
Before I answer that question,
okay,
I'm going to tell you that. You know, every time you do a movie, it's like a little miracle. It's if things are right, what the public doesn't know is there's a tremendous amount of love between the people making a movie, especially the director and the other actors. Because, you know how it is if you have the same purpose as one other person?
Mm-hmm.
Say that you both want to just find the best evening gown for the event, and you're all excited and you go to find the evening gown. Let's say that you're writing a story together, you know, and there's that. It's a very special camaraderie in the arts. I have a movie coming out called Nothing Special that Angela Garcia Combs directed. I just won Best Actress at the about 4 weeks ago at the Toronto International Female Eye Festival.
Oh, congratulations.
I just did a movie with Jasmine McGlade. This is one of her first or second efforts. She's a Harvard girl, and I played a woman who was a hoarder, who's, you know, like a homeless person, she collects things from dustbins. It's called With Love, Maria. And, you know, those people are very suspicious of the normal people and very reclusive. And we had two cameras every minute. All I'm trying to say is every time I make a movie, it's my favorite, you know. I did a movie with Jack Perez a little earlier in the year called Some Guy Who Kills People, which is produced by John. You know what? I can never think of his name. He's the most famous producer in the whole world. John. Oh, damn it. Hold on a second. Get my extraordinarily handsome husband. You would want him if you saw him. Stephen, what's that name? John, who produced Some Guy Who Kills People? John Landis.
Oh.
And it's with John Landis is Kevin Corrigan. And, you know, Perez is like a big friend of mine now. And I'm not going to let that little Jasmine Lloyd go. She's going to turn into my good friend. I have a great life. I just get all these guys. We all get together. I never leave them behind anymore. I just include them. So every movie I make is like this incredible, wonderful time. I think Five Easy Pieces is a really good movie. I saw it when it came out and thought it was better. I was very young. I thought it was a jumble. How funny that it, how inevitable that it came out in such a good way. Then I saw it maybe 10 years ago, and I thought, Jesus, this is a perfect script. This is a perfect script. The plot is perfect. Then I saw it 3 years ago, and I thought, oh, my God, the acting is amazing in this movie. So as I age, I hate to use the word, but let's just age, I see more and more. You know, I think it's one of the best movies we've ever had. I think it's an historic piece, a bit of a masterpiece.
Wow.
I'm very proud.
Well, I did not feel bad asking you to identify a couple of those little miracles by name, because when I looked, and I don't actually trust IMDb all the time because it seems to be.
Thank you, darling. Yay! Oh, I hear applause. And it's for you.
For who?
For you, for saying you don't trust IMDb. We keep getting everything wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, they've got you down here for something like 184, 185 film titles. And, you know, when you see that many, you got to think, oh, you've got to have some favorites, some that you can pick out of all those that really stand out. And for all I know, there may be more than 185.
There are, I think. I was in a restaurant once, and the waiter was walking around. He knew me, and he heard me. Actually, this is a true story. He heard me say something like, I've done 180 movies, and he said, no, including your television, as black as 300, but I haven't counted all that. But I think it's up to 195 movies now, because I'm making them, you know.
Wow.
It keeps happening. Yes, I've had a very, very good time. I loved working with Robert Altman.
Mm-hmm.
I was in ecstasy doing Nashville the whole time. We were all, you know, Ronnie Blakely is still a very good friend of mine. We sing together when we can. And then I loved Robert very much when he had his own original place in the history of film that never can be reproduced.
And what about another director, famous director you work with, Hitchcock? How did that go?
He was like an uncle to me. I mean, I like to say avuncular, but then people look at me like, what does that mean? It means like an uncle, avuncular. Anyway, so, we had a very, very good time. He's a very fun-loving guy. He loves fun. He used to exchange limericks. There was a young man from Khartoum who met a masculine man from Khartoum. A feminine man from Khartoum took a masculine girl to his room. They argued all night, had a terrible fight about who would do what and to whom. We would exchange limericks, and he would try to catch me on my vocabulary because he found out it was a good one. And he'd say,
your work today has been very perspicacious, Miss Black.
Oh, you mean keenly perceptive?
Yes, that's what I mean.
And I sort of catch me. And he loved sitting and talking with us, and he loved having a good time. And he's a great jokester. He really was playing with life. He was a great, and at the same time, an extremely shrewd man a perfectionist. So it was a very interesting combination. And I think he fired two people before the first 2 weeks. And he said to me that I was too lovable in the part. That's not the adjective he used, but I can't think of it right now. And he wanted me to speak more in a mid-Atlantic way.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I did. But it was a really wonderful fun being around him. I loved it. It's a great, great memory for me.
Now, I have to bring this up because when I announced that we were going to do this interview on Facebook, people started talking about a movie that I was not familiar with, and I got a little tiny clip that I want to play in tribute to all the people who brought this up and were big fans of this. This is, you may want to hold your ears, this is from Trilogy of Terror. Listen to this.
That ball probably just burned out.
Sounded like you were being attacked
by
Donald
Duck.
You're a
very naughty boy. You're naughty. You need a little clipping. I mean, I am trying to be a serious actress. We're talking about Broadway at Altman. And you have 3 minutes of screaming and honking and wanking. I mean, really, please. I mean, you know, I did that because the character in the first story I was married to. Mm-hmm. He played a student and I played this wicked teacher. And that's, my manager sat in the middle. I wish I hadn't done that in a way because, really, I don't like horror movies. Mm. I think blood is very uninteresting. I don't know what's interesting about blood. I mean, it doesn't say anything, doesn't do anything, no song and dance routine. Anyway, my manager sat in the middle of the living room till 4 in the morning trying to get me to do this. And finally said, okay, if my husband plays this part, I'll do it. And they said, okay. That's not my husband now, by the way, but that was my then husband. And that's really why I did it. And for some reason, you know, I must tell you that there's some conceptual shock about this piece that people can never quite get over. They really love it. I thought you were going to say, you know what I thought you were going to play for me?
No, what?
You know, when you said, Cold Your Ears, I'm going to play. So I thought you were going to play Come Back to Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, because that is certainly something that, I tell you, I hear more about that one than Trilogy these days. And that was a very, very difficult role for me.
Well,
so I thought you were going to talk about that one.
It was strange because immediately after I posted the information about the interview, someone put up a line and I said, okay, I have to admit, I don't know what you're referring to. And then they gave me a link, and then they finally gave me the title, and I was like, I don't know this one. And I went back, and I fortunately it's been chopped up into 10-minute pieces. Well, that doesn't sound right with that movie. But anyway, on YouTube, and I watched, and I was like, oh, my God. And it just cracked me up. It seems so the antithesis of all the extraordinary films that you've made.
Well, I love you again. You can come to my tea parties.
Oh, thank
you're
you.
A good boy. Well, it was an interesting challenge to create out of a little wooden thing that got actually tossed around the room in an inept way many times. That you know that was going to be my undoing. It was, you had to have quite an imagination for that, but
still, would think
it's a,
now
yeah.
Along that line. Let's take just a minute. And since we're talking about your co-stars, and that was a rather wooden co-star, as you said, what about some of your more flexible co-stars? Can you pick one or two who really made an impression on you, either, you know, for better or worse over the years?
You're just a little naughty, aren't you?
No, not at all.
Naughty,
no.
Yes, a little. No, you have to be a little naughty to be interesting, you know. So Robert Redford and I had lunch, and we were doing The Great Gatsby, and I just had an impression of him as he was sort of like being back in college at the grill, you know, with a student. I mean, with a young, beautiful college guy. He was very shy, very easygoing. I guess you'd have to say a very regular guy, you know, just... If you had met him and had lunch with him, you'd just think he was, you know, some guy who did business in the Midwest and had a big ranch or something. And then a screenplay that I wrote was accepted by his lab in Utah, the Sundance lab.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him again there, and, you know, very friendly, very beautiful man. Jack Nicholson is, I would say, a very great spirit. I consider him to be a very, very huge person. If you see him talking to someone that he's just run into, that he's never known in his life, and you don't know his birth, he seems like an old friend. I think to Jack, everyone in the world is like an old friend to him, which I consider to be a great... person who feels that way. Story I like to tell about Jack is I once said to him, you know, Jack, some people you cannot act, you can't find these people. You say, hello, hello in there, hello, hello, where are you, hello? He said, Blackie, you just keep looking and you're always going to find the man. I just, you know, that's how he is. He's a very great person. Great first talent, we all know that.
What about the other type of person? I mean, you've been in the industry a while. You're at an age where you should feel comfortable saying what you think. Anyone who, and maybe someone who's not with us anymore, who was overrated, who got too much credit for ability and talent and maybe coasted, or someone you were not as impressed with as most people were?
No, I can think of no one at all like that. Because generally I feel that actors are, you know, if you watch commercials on television, you're like, God, these actors are so good. I don't know. I think acknowledgement for everyone is excellent. Oh, I have worked with people who have been fairly suppressive to the artist. And what happens in those cases is you're suppressed. So you're kind of up all night crying and so forth. And I would never name names, but what happens is... I had a director who, by the way, is not particularly famous anyway, who wanted me to actually be his wife.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I'm not his wife. I'm an actor, and he wanted me to, I don't know, very difficult to explain. But he was, the other people on this particular movie wanted to throttle him all the time, too. And he had very strange ideas about directing. He would say, now hold your arms against your sides during this shot, Karen. Don't move. See, that's the first and last time I have ever received that direction. And I want you to look at the people who are watching you on the set. And I want you to be able to tell me something about everything they're wearing or something about each person while you're saying your lines. Now, this is absolutely guaranteed to ruin your performance. I don't think it did ruin my performance, but it's pretty much guaranteed to ruin your performance. It takes you out of the scene, takes you, you know, you're not free, you have no freedom of expression. So that kind of thing can happen, but really, I've got to tell you, it's really rare. That insane suppressive direction has only occurred once. I've been in companies or groups where what happens is there are people with hidden agendas of their own who are quite powerful, who will gossip. And who will turn the company against, let's say, me or somebody else in the company or whatever. And nobody seems to recognize that there's no truth in this. It's just gossip, and the person has something to lose or something to gain by putting one or two or five people down in the company. Do you know what I mean? And so what transpires is a tremendous disorder and chaos you know, people walk off and they won't be in the movie, or they'll horrible things will happen, and it just has to do with just some malintent from a few people that those people are not recognized for their malintent because they're covert about it. And that's very rare too. That's only, I would say, though, there are two situations like that in all these movies that I can tell you, but they are horrendous enough that they seem to be more than two. And then this director who was like saying these things to us, that whom I described, that was one. Generally, people don't want to be a director. unless they're interested in life and people and a behavior. Huh. You know, so once you have a person who has that sensibility, you've got a great person. And they're pretty. I don't have the courage to be a director. I do not want to be a director. I cannot be that responsible for that many things. I can't tolerate it. So you know, to just decide to be a director is you have to be a pretty wonderful person, seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, Karen, we have completely run out of time, but I want to tell everybody you can see Karen Black starring with Tana. I don't know why she didn't
Tana, uh-huh.
talk to her. Tana Frederick in the production of writer Henry Jaglom's new play, just 45 minutes from
Provol,
Broadway.
And David Provol.
Yep.
And Jack Heller.
Okay.
You know,
and they
and
are
Julie
all.
Davis.
All right, and they are all.
And David Garber.
They are all together at the Edgemar Center for the Arts in Santa Monica, California. The play has been extended through July 31st, and you can order tickets online at edgemarcenter.org or call 310-392-7327. Karen, can fans find you? Are you involved in Twitter or Facebook, any of that kind of thing?
Oh, KarenBlack.com.
Oh, okay. Very good.
I think that's how you reach me. You know, I'm I just got a new computer and a new BlackBerry, so I'm very confused about all this. Hold on one second, okay? Stephen, how will people reach me? If the people that he's talking to want to reach me, KarenBlack.com?
KarenBlack.com, and or, you know what, as you go to
KarenBlack.com, or
Facebook
fan page. Facebook fan page.
Okay, very good. Well, Karen, listen, it was delightful to talk to you today, and I know that if we can trust anything on IMDb, it indicates you have something like 6 films in pre- or post-production. So if you would like to come back and chat again when you have another film or something to chat about and promote, please, please, please come back and talk to us.
I would love to, and you've been really wonderful. Lots of hugs. Hug, 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 hug. Can you feel it?
I can. I actually can.
Oh, good. Hug, hug, hug.
Hey, thank
Very
you
nice.
So much.
I would love to come back, and I intend to.
That would be wonderful. You take care, and I'll look forward to talking again soon.
Very good. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. And, folks, for more original interviews with your favorite TV and film actors, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com, MrMedia.com. You can now hear Mr. Media while you're on the go with Stitcher Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile application. The latest episode of Mr. Media is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Available for your iPhone, your Palm Pre, Android phone, or your BlackBerry. And downloading is easy, so go to Stitcher.com or check out the App Store for your individual mobile phone. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter. It's twitter.com/andelman, or on Facebook, just search Mr. Media Interviews. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.